We're at the midway point in this NBA season and gearing up for a baseline to baseline sprint to the playoffs. This is Knuckle Push-Ups. My name is Patrick O'Connor, a basketball enthusiast, and I am joined by my tag team partner, as I am every week, the 6'4 menace out of East Dennis, Sean Silver.
A baseline to baseline sprint, just like I'm running suicides at the DY gym circa 1999.
That's right. We may not be the fastest team. We may not be the strongest team. We may not be the most proficient team, but we will be the most conditioned team. That's Cape Cod basketball in a nutshell right there.
You got that from somewhere.
I think that's from Miracle.
I was going to say, Mr. Movies over here, what quote does that... We did get our witty movie quip in right at the beginning.
So, right up at the top. Well, that's what people tune in for.
All 12 people, very excited.
Do you want to know what, though? Like, that's way more than we had a month ago.
That's our community, baby.
That's right. And we're you can't get to 1,000 before you got to pass 12 before you can get to 1,000. So we're on our way.
We were just talking off pod about Chris Jericho and how he is the champion of AEW wrestling, which is coming to Boston in April. I am going. And he is damn near 50 years old. He is still relevant. But even Chris Jericho had to start somewhere. And that was probably in some barn with 12 people watching. So one day, we too will get to say that Raw is Knuckle Push-Up.
We too will perform live at the Aganis Arena. It's got to be great. Could you imagine going to a podcast taping in a college gym? It sounds awesome.
Yeah, I bet you I've already been to one, actually, not for basketball, but for wrestling. I saw Bruce Pritchard's Something to Wrestle With podcast at the House of Blues.
And I got to think that, like, you know, Bill Simmons and the team at the Ringer is, Spotify wouldn't be dumping money into sucking up all these podcast companies if they didn't think there was arena shows in it somewhere down the line. Gimlet, Parcast, the Ringer, a sold out
stadium tour. Yeah.
Stadium tour of the Rewatchables.
People are going to be buying t-shirts. Yes. The Rewatchables 2020 summer tour.
Speaking of summer tours, The Masked Singer also coming to Boston the week of...
What?
Yeah. They're going on tour the week of June 13th. They will be at the Wang. And I don't know who's going to be performing. I don't know if it's just going to be, if we're going to see, just Boston level celebrities out there, but there will be, The Masked Singer will be performing live in the city on a hill.
There's something to aspire to here, because The Masked Singer, a cultural phenomenon, like, you think about this reality show, The Bachelor's been around for a couple of decades now. Dancing with the Stars has been around for what, probably 15 years or so.
At least.
The Masked Singer is going to have staying power, right? So it should be our goal, Patrick, when The Masked Singer does its tour of Boston, say, a few years from now, that we be just enthusiastic enough about The Masked Singer and just famous enough as basketball podcasters to be on The Masked Singer live event tour, Boston, Mass.
I think that's a great goal, and I'm committed. I'm willing. I'll put in the time and effort. We'll crack this social media thing. I think we've got it in us.
Do you have a character in mind?
Oh, I'll have to get back to you on that, of what it would be.
I would be a seagull.
that's very good. I'll think of one, and I'll craft a persona for it. And I don't want to give away too much, but I'll come up with one. The seagull.
Oh yeah,
is very
that's
good.
True. Crap, I just gave myself away. If I'm on this thing, I just gave myself away.
Hey, there's no bad ideas in a brainstorm. We're getting there. It's okay. This is version one, and this, we might cut all this. We don't know, so don't worry about it. Your secret is safe. Anyway, thank do you, you want to talk about basketball?
Yes, sir. That's what I came here for. I was all excited today.
It's been I've been trying to wrap my head around, like, how I could sum up, like, a tweet length description of the 2019-2020 season thus far. Like, it's just been exhausting in a good way, I guess, because for the amount of, like, basketball being a 12-month sport now, I mean, we've been kind of in that corner and cheering for that for a real long time. And now that it's here, it's hard to keep up with everything. And even like through free agency last summer, I can remember like waiting for the birth of my child, shooting jumpers in my driveway, and just like my wife just doing laps around the yard, basically being like, when's this kid coming? And like, we're like listening to, I've got the radio in the car turned all the way up, and we're just listening to like trade deadline deals firing off on the radio, and I'm shooting jumpers in the driveway and just waiting and thinking like, this is going to be an awesome season. I can't wait to do this. The baby's going to be born at a time where I'm up at all hours of the night. Perfect time just to be catching up on basketball fodder. And then when the rubber hits the road, it's right when I'm like basically going on paternity leave. So I'm thinking like, I'm going to be able to consume all this content for the whole first half of the season. This is going to be great. And it was just like being like, I've watched an instructional video about surfing. I'm ready to get out there. And I just got swept up and absolutely obliterated, like the end of Point Break, by the tidal wave of content this season. It has been an inundation, Sean, of just all kinds of stuff from every angle. And I don't really know how I feel about it. I got to streamline. I've got to focus on the second half and just kind of really take stock of what about the NBA that I like and just put my effort there, because it's hard to do that for all 30 teams. It's a lot of games.
Well, it's certainly tough to do it about all 30, but I think the part of what's made this so intriguing and also so tough to follow is the fact that a lot of fan bases think they're legitimately in this thing right now.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk about the parody. I mean, it's been great for us. The parody of the NBA, it's been great for a podcast about basketball, because you're not running over the same topics every week. You've got a lot of different stuff to talk about, and it's great because there's engagement across a lot of cities right now. I think there's probably like 10 fan bases right now, just as to make it a nice even number, who think that they've got a shot at the finals.
Yeah.
You know, a few more who are having perhaps unexpectedly good season. You might say that the Mavericks have exceeded expectations. The Thunder certainly have exceeded expectations. So you've got a dozen or more teams where people are engaged. People are thinking, where are we going to land in the playoff seeding? I mean, we've talked all season about the East and how tight it's been in the East. The Raptors going on a winning streak has opened that up a little bit, knocked the Celtics down to third. The Pacers having some trouble acclimating Victor Oladipo, so they dropped down to sixth. So that's a little looser than it's been. But the West is now, I mean, that's a mess. You know, four or five games separating the two seed from the seventh seed out West. So, again, with just so many fan bases involved, so many games that may not be must-see, but you're intrigued about them. You think you got to watch them, because what if this team means something in the spring? I got to catch up. I got to figure out what they're all about.
Yeah, the fear of missing out in the NBA is very real, and especially in this climate that we're in, that you can consume basketball-related content through literally every medium that's been invented thus far. So it's hard to kind of pick and choose when you're just looking at League Pass to look at what games you could tune into right now if you don't want to just trust TNT or the national broadcast schedule, if you want to kind of dive in.
Well, they got a lot of Warriors games.
They do have a lot of Warriors,
unfortunately.
A lot of Pelicans games.
A lot of first half Pelicans games. Yep.
And so it's tough to kind of like pick like what teams am I going to dive into. And I've been trying to trust my gut and just kind of be like, you know, if I see Cleveland versus Atlanta, do I need to tune into that? No, probably not. At this point in the season, no. So I wanted to move away from where we're lucky that we can kind of dip in and out of every different fan base, but, and we're not just inventing stories to talk about, like if we're just focusing on one section or just the Celtics or anything like that. In improv, we call that, you want to focus on discovery as opposed to invention. We don't want to invent reasons and invent fake trades or invent stuff that we could possibly think are interesting. We can just discover what's actually good out there by consuming what's in front of us. So I thought it might be fun to do some performance reviews here, try to think about where we are and where we want to go and ultimately what goal we want to get to, and just kind of take a look at the NBA and how people are doing, what cuts need to be made from your time standpoint.
So are you bringing in the bobs? Like, you know, someone's not going to work here anymore?
Not going to make it to League Pass anymore. I think you should league pass leave. I think like there's a great Twitter account.
Yes.
That you've seen it, right? I think you should league pass.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I've never seen the TV show, I do find the Twitter account semi-amazing just because I don't get the whole joke, but at least some of it.
It's a little breadcrumb for you to pick up in the offseason. It's on Netflix. It's not going anywhere. But yeah, so let's get the Bobs in here. All season we've been talking about parity. Every team is at least watchable. And with 30 games or around 30-ish games left after the All-Star break, it's time that, you know, the rubber is just about to hit the road. So I want to come in, do some performance reviews here and see who's really going to, who has earned the attention from the KP, from the Hoops Detectives for the second half. So my question to you, thinking about performance reviews for the NBA, who's getting all your attention down the stretch here, Sean?
Well, I got to start with the hometown boys. I know it's kind of a cop-out here because obviously the Celtics are the team that I think both of us consume the most of.
Sure.
But to me, the idea of Jason Tatum going absolutely bonkers and moving up an echelon from just an all-star player to like an all-NBA level player to me is fascinating. And this is coming from a guy who just a couple of months ago was like, I can't stand the ebbs and flows of Jason Tatum this season. Maybe there's a chance that they can get Karl Anthony Towns and have a big man. Jason Tatum is the guy. I would put him on the table. Hot ass take to have. I am just glad that it worked out where Jason Tatum stopped dicking around here and just started finishing at the rim, just launching daggers from downtown, defending like an all-league level defender. Like everything that Tatum is doing right now to me is just a fascinating evolution of a 21-year-old basketball player from a kid with a lot of talent into a guy who's capable of leading a team. And then you add in that supporting cast, and I think the Celtics, for any consumer of the NBA, not just a guy in Boston with a basketball podcast, that's a great story.
I couldn't agree with you more. I have compared Jason Tatum's game to that of a baby giraffe more times than I'd like to admit to. The comparisons to Paul Pierce have kind of surrounded this kid since he was first drafted by the Celtics. But where I saw most of the truth comparisons were when he would get fouled going to the hoop and just flail into the front row. And that was some very Paul Pierce shit.
And look for the call.
And the fact that he is moving beyond that is awesome. I was really, really concerned about Tatum in his sophomore season because he had spent a lot of time out in LA with Kobe working on his game and then came back and it just did not look like the step we were looking for him to take. And I thought it was just a long con by the Lakers to sabotage the Celtics from the inside. I would not have put it past the Mamba to play some mind games like that. That's that Mamba mentality. Sure. And so this season coming in, I'm like, okay, I'm looking for it from Tatum to see what's going on this season. Because also when you have a young superstar like that, you want to make sure he's going to be around for a while, you know? And you want to make sure that I didn't want to be investing after some up and down seasons with people who from a fan perspective of who you're investing in, you want to make sure that investment pays off. The Brinks truck never backed up for IT, and Kyrie left to set the altar. And so I was, you know, it was a little more emotional in my Tatum fandom. I was a little more tentative with that. So yeah, watching him really grow into a superstar and also doing it without being anointed necessarily has been really fun to watch and will continue to be fun to watch.
He's taken it himself, and that's one of the more impressive things because, like we've said in this pod, the league is just ready to anoint, and this is the next guy. There might have been a couple of false starts with Tatum. Now you see him getting a little bit more pub, you know, some more advertisements. People around the league are raving about him. But it's truly a case here where I don't think anybody forgot about him, but we just didn't know when to expect it. And here it is, and it's pretty cool.
Well, he's contributing at an incredibly high level for a team that's actually good at basketball. So as opposed to someone like Trae Young, who is an offensive wizard, or Devin Booker, who's an offensive wizard, they play for teams that are trash. Shout out to the logo in Atlanta. But they're not putting it together. And they're not that far off, don't get me wrong, in case one of our 12 listeners is from Atlanta, I don't want to offend. They'll be really good real soon, but it's not today.
I'll put Atlanta on my list, Patrick.
Yeah.
To see Collins and Capella work side by side with Young in the same lineup and Kevin Herter just launching away, like, they clearly have a core. Let's see how it goes over the next 25, 30 games here. If they're playing in a competitive game, I'm switching to League Pass to watch Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, I think they're a team where it's like, you got to follow the joy, and that's kind of what I put my whole list around, is there's just going to be a certain amount of teams that you know are going to be there that you don't really need to watch right now. I don't need to watch another minute of Houston basketball. Like, yes, I'm very intrigued by the all small ball. It's worked out, like, in the first couple games. Like, but Westbrook and Harden, when they played the Celtics, they combined for, I want to say it was like 80% of the points were scored by Westbrook and Harden. That's awesome in a like a one or two game sample size. I don't think that will always be the case. And I don't need to watch the next 28 games to prove out that theorem. Like, I've got limited time. I want to have fun watching hoops. And part of that is watching a team emerge. I'll be dipping in and out. I want to see what happens in New York. I'm completely just engrossed by this clown show, and I want to see if that reflects the product on the court as well. I won't be watching them for the same reasons as I'm watching the Celtics, but it does give me some basketball joy, which you have to follow.
You know who else I don't have to watch a whole lot of is the Brooklyn Nets. Absolutely no interest in watching Brooklyn Nets games. I don't care if Kyrie's healthy. I don't care if he has a lot of talented pieces around him. This man at the trade deadline, or slightly prior to the trade deadline, basically said that nobody on the roster was worthy of being on a championship team, that they had a long way to go and guys needed to move. And talk about instilling confidence in your locker room. I really don't think that Kyrie Irving needs to be spoken about on this podcast. I mean, we've already done it enough, but in terms of just saying team that I'm kicking in the dustbin, it's Brooklyn. We all know they're waiting for next year, and I don't even know why they're playing this year for anything, because it's going to be fruitless, so why waste your time?
I'm just not interested. I'm just not interested. That's what it comes down to. I mean, I'm trying to go to all 30 NBA arenas before we hang up the Spurs here, and
yeah,
I love watching basketball at the Barclays. It's awesome. But I have no interest at all in anything going on with that team. I mean, there's a lot of pieces on that team that what I'm most interested in is where they end up next and when they travel back to Brooklyn to play the Nets. But until that happens, I don't really care. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie, I don't know where he's going to go next, but I guarantee you his first game against Brooklyn will be must-see television.
Yeah.
Another team that I don't need to watch at all is, well, most of the East. I don't need to spend too much time with Orlando, Washington, Chicago, Detroit, Charlotte. There's just not a whole lot going on. I'm slightly interested in Detroit just because the resurgence of Derrick Rose has been fun to watch. I mean, that guy in the past couple of seasons after his injury, just not looking the same, then bouncing around to a season in New York, to going to Cleveland, to then potentially walking out of basketball, to a slight resurgence with Tibbs in Minnesota, to then really full neck tattoo Derrick Rose in Detroit has been a lot of fun to watch and a real threat. And they were asking for, like, what was the asking price for him at the trade deadline? Like a first, two firsts?
Seems like a lot of teams at the deadline were asking for things that were too rich for the buyer's blood. It kind of makes you wonder, like, what is Detroit really holding on to him for? I mean, I get that he's a good value and he's a good player and you're giving your fans, I guess, something, but we're told that building from the middle is a fool's errand. So, you know, what's Detroit trying to hang in it for with Blake Griffin down for the season?
Yeah.
Luke Kennard's not healthy. I mean, you know, you got a few guys there who can play decent basketball, and Derrick Rose is your ringleader. It's like, what are you doing?
So, I mean, they're a condensed view team, we'll say. That I'm curious as what's going on in the Motor City, but there's just not a whole lot. I mean, I think the East is pretty much locked up. So other than like allegiance to Boston and just watching Giannis have a historic season, and Toronto kind of like rebuild, having another unbelievable season without Kawhi and watching the emergence of an entire, like essentially Spurs East, like rise in the North. I think that's really fun
that
too.
That is a team that I definitely want to tune in on. I mean, they've won 15 in a row. That streak is over now, but we've talked about like momentum. How much does that matter? Like, did Toronto peak too early? Clearly they're capable of some great things. They did these great things in a 15-game winning streak with some of their guys hurt. But the evolution of Pascal Siakam, you talk about a baby giraffe.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy who learned the game on the fly while playing major American college basketball in the NBA, and has just really blown me away this year. The fact that he could win most improved player 2 years in a row. Just, I mean, and taking the mantle from Kawhi, here's a guy who didn't have anywhere near the pedigree of Kawhi Leonard, but is leading a team back to the cusp of championship contention. And just defensively, the pieces on that team, how they fit together, like it kind of flies in the face of the model now. And I'm not talking about Rick Martell, but I am talking just about how it's done in the NBA. Like, they're 12 deep.
Yeah.
And that to me is really fascinating, and much more fascinating than what's going on in Milwaukee, where it's just kind of like Giannis, and I've heard it described as like a TJ Maxx roster. Just like a bunch. I forget where I saw this. I'd have to go back on Twitter, but somebody was like, yo, check out this TJ Maxx ass roster that Milwaukee has. And it's a Budenholzer system. And I know that Nick Nurse has a system too, but for some reason, I just feel like Milwaukee is gimmicky and doomed to fail, and Toronto, for some reason, there's just more legitimacy to that. There's more high-end talent around there surrounding Siakam, and frankly, they've proven it before, so why not go and prove it again? So there's something that I would have my eye on, and I would say Bucks, don't really need to watch you right now. Let's see you prove it in the playoffs. I hate to be that myopic, but that's my feeling about Milwaukee.
I feel similarly to the Western Conference too. The battle for LA is a great subplot, but we know they're both going to be there. I'm way more interested in what's going on in the second half of the playoff picture out West. Like, if Memphis can make it, can hold on to the eighth spot or potentially move up. Oklahoma City being kind of a, like, in the same boat where it's like, I don't know how you don't check out a Thunder game. Assuming that they were going to be absolute trash this season, that they were going to basically, they took on Chris Paul to scrap this team for parts. We had it penciled in that some team in the East is going to make a Godfather offer for Danilo for a big push. Like, if Miami could have landed him somehow,
Steven
that was going to
Adams, yes, maybe.
Exactly. Yep. Steven Adams was included in so many trade discussions.
They were a team of pieces, Patrick.
Right. They were like, okay,
they were destined to move.
It's time to blow it up. Let's relegate this team is kind of what the NBA Reddit basically had allotted for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And they're turning a lot of heads. Chris Paul is playing with like a normal basketball team for the first time in years. It's like just there to play hoops, which is great. It's going to extend his career. I still don't know if, like, you know, near like 40 million or over is going to look good when he's 37 years old, but who cares? Because it's just fun to watch and people go to the arena. So keep it going. Yeah. It's
enjoy it while you have
it. Yeah. Like the whole idea, like Memphis and Portland and Memphis are going to battle it out for the eighth seed, and that's going to be great. I mean, Dame is hurt now, but that team too, like, he's having a historic season. I'm way more interested in watching where there's actual stakes on the line here for people to be playing for a postseason berth, as opposed to just watching Harden and Westbrook kind of mess around with, you know, small ball and like figuring out like basketball born in a lab. It's just not, it's X-Pac heat is exactly what that team is. And I can't get into it. And they just suck the life right out of me. So I think keeping an eye on like the scrappier teams out West is where my attention is going to be for the next 30 games or so.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the Blazers. They're going to get Nurkic back, and you know, that presumably should help their chances as well. At the time that we're recording this, they're 4 out of the 8th seed. So they're going to be challenging Memphis, certainly Memphis with a much younger crew. And the Pelicans, And I know the Spurs are sandwiched there too, but the Spurs are always in a basketball conversation around this time of year. But the Pelicans with Zion, like, I wasn't going to buy the hype. I really didn't want to buy the hype. I mean, you know, a guy who got injured in college, got injured in preseason. Like, I like pretty basketball players. I like finesse. But, like, this guy just gets all up in your spot and just ruins you.
And how about him bringing back the post up?
Yeah. There's so many elements to Zion Williamson that I wanted to dislike, and he's winning me over. So you take him and that team around him, which is pretty good. I mean, we had talked earlier in the season, and I was just like, oh, blow it up. You know, he's not there. You got, what is J.J. Redick doing on this team? What value does he have to them? Well, guess what? The Pelicans have a chance to be the eighth seed and get in there, get in the ring with the Lakers in round one and maybe steal a game or two off of them and make them quiver in their boots a little bit. It's, to me, that's fascinating.
Lots going on. Basketball is, for as much as we've talked this season about how basketball born in a lab is just not fun to watch, and the more threes you shoot, it's not exciting anymore. It just is so, it's such a bummer. And this is the time of year where it's like, granted, it's the All-Star break. We're heading into just a weekend of insanity, a time of recording. But it's a chance to kind of reinvigorate the love of the, like, the love for the game, because we're at a point now where anything can happen down the stretch. You know, I mean, there was the Celtics, the year they went, 2010, where it was the, when they were playing the Lakers again in the finals,
they were 500 in the second half.
And we were like, it was like, because they had a historic, for them, first half of the season. It was just an unbelievable run that it was like, this team's going to win the NBA title.
They were looking great.
And then 50, and then 500 down the stretch. And we didn't know what was going to happen. And that type of stuff pops up all the time. It's a little more exciting when it's a team that looks like trash and then works their way into the playoffs. It's a lot more fun. And that's what we want to capitalize on now. And I think that there's a lot more teams in that boat because there's so many more combustible elements around the league. And there's just young guys who are scrappy and playing for it, and teams that are just coming together and riding the momentum wave of chemistry. And it's all visible now, and it's all kind of like, you know, able to be consumed. And that's where you got to put the focus. I think we're aligned on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of those teams that, you know, again, you mentioned the East and just kind of the predictable elements of it. I mean, I think Miami is kind of one of those teams that you're talking about. Granted, they have the established veteran in Butler. They've got Goran Dragic, who's, you know, a 10-year NBA guy as well, and they just picked up Andre Iguodala. But the fascinating thing to me about Miami is not the expected pieces, but how those young guys feed off of it. And now that you bring in a veteran like Iguodala, of whom so many things are expected, you know, people are just thinking, oh, you brought this lockdown defender in into the mix. I mean, the Heat have succeeded because of Jimmy Butler, but also because they have a lot of pieces that play really well around him. They want to prove something. These young guys, these unheralded guys from Miami. So that mix to me is pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, watching guys like Duncan and Nunn come alive has been really fun in Miami. And Bam Adebayo. Like, so yes, you have the lightning rod.
Absolutely.
You have a lightning rod in Jimmy Butler. Who is, and you have like kind of the guys who've been on the Heat for a while, Olenek, shout out to Kelly, Goran Dragic, and I was just kind of ho hum on that team to start the year, even with Butler going down there.
Sure.
And that, but then Butler has been great. He's now chirping, and like that chirpiness is back. Plus Jay Crowder's there, his old running buddy from Marquette. I don't know how that's going to work out. I don't actually think they're friends. So like that's going to be interesting. And then also, like, to build an Iguodala being there to see, like, if this is going to be a nucleus that can actually pull some, like, marquee talent away from other teams that have cap space and the ability to spend. If they can be a team where it's, like, not a foregone conclusion that they're going to attract talent the way we always assume wherever LeBron goes is going to be a team like that. It'd be interesting to see if Miami can kind of do that now in a post-LeBron world where, I mean, I didn't know what their path was. out of the wilderness after LeBron left Miami. It's interesting now that if the whole idea of bully ball in Philadelphia has just migrated south, and now like that winds up being the new identity of the Heat, could be kind of cool. But it's definitely worth checking out for Bam, Nunn, and Duncan alone.
Duncan, who only shoots three-pointers.
Hey,
like,
man.
Literally, I think he attempts 8 shots a game, and like 7 of them are three-pointers.
He's the generational Steve Novak.
Oh, my God. Wow. Hey, nice pullback. Nice reference there. Miami is an example of a team, too. Great coach. Kind of receded to the middle a little bit and didn't say, hey, we got a tank. You know, they just took a step back, kind of kept their team good, kept their team relevant. You've got Spoelstra, and eventually you were able to lure somebody back, and the rising tide lifted all boats. I mean, it's, again, you're either tanking or you're trying to win a ring, right, in this NBA. That's how we're told that it should be. But I feel like there's a few examples of teams that have built out of the middle, and Miami is one, and that's a credit to them.
Yeah, and, like, those are teams that if you take the time to invest in building out your identity, you're always going to be interesting and in the mix. Teams that just go for rings, either in the tank or in the hunt, like, that's boom or bust, man. I mean, that can shift on an ACL. Look at the Warriors.
Yeah.
Look at the Nets, where it's like, yep, one wrong turn. I mean, granted, big wrong turn. But, like, if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, you better hope it's not a bumpy ride home. Because if those eggs start spilling, you're fucked. Your quiche is just ruined. So I think it's really important to, like, build out the chemistry of a team and let that speak for itself. So with Miami, if you're going to build your identity around Jimmy Butler, then you're going to pull in guys who either want to play like or with Jimmy Butler. You know, the chip on the shoulder is a very compelling reason to join a team. And it's also in Miami, which is gorgeous. And you're also, you know, making big time money, and you're playing in the organization run by Pat Riley. Those are all really good reasons to go. And also really good reasons to, like, I'd be in free agency. They can probably be pretty choosy because I'm sure there'll be some guys out there. I think, like, the 21 offseason is probably going to be where they make their stand, because that's when guys like Giannis and Gordon Hayward are up as well. But what's going to attract guys like that there, whether it's like upper echelon free agents or mid-tier free agents who are looking to make an impact, they're going to be attracted by chemistry more than anything else. So I think watching Miami now and kind of like jumping on and off the bandwagon there would be a good investment in league pastime.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, a team like the Nets, and you mentioned the quiche. I was thinking of a one-man play called a Quiche Cooks in Brooklyn, and just how poorly that went back in 2013 when the Nets were just like, all right, well, we made a move and got Deron Williams, so now we're a competitor.
Right.
So we're going to bring in Garnett and Pierce and Joe Johnson, and we have a super team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, well, guess what? No, you know, because you don't have the chemistry.
No, that was the damn Yankees of basketball.
Yeah, they're doing it again here, and Durant's going to return, but it's kind of like, who is the third guy? Who is the third man?
Who is the third man?
Go get him, Hulkster!
Go get him, baby!
Yeah, but whose side is he on?
That's right. Well, the question here is, who is Velvet Revolver? And who is Audio Slave? Who are these super teams, and which one's going to be good?
Seriously, like with the Nets, it's the whole premise was, you know, we're gonna build a super team in New York City, and it's just like, well, you're gonna have Kyrie and Durant next year, but like, is it LeVert? Is it Dinwiddie? I mean, could Dinwiddie and Kyrie coexist? I think the answer is probably no.
Right.
So it's at least not in the most efficient sense. So it just shows you, you know, the freaking Nets, man, just swinging for the fences every 7 or 8 years. And if you don't really think about your craft and your execution, then it's going to look shoddy.
Yeah, and, you know, ultimately, it's like they might be a team. Last year was so frustrating with Kyrie in Boston, just basically putting out the vibe of, I just want to get to the playoffs. Like, we'll be ready for the playoffs, and I just want to get there. And thinking like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe we were wrong, and maybe we should ignore Jiminy Cricket telling us to worry about this Kyrie in Boston thing. And once we get to the playoffs, it's a different story. And it was not. It was the greatest fears realized. I can't imagine that just moving to Brooklyn, if that's the same mentality, you're going to get a different result. And, you know, the rumors on the streets is that they already have, like, their guys that they know they want to target that are already interested in going to Brooklyn. So what do we know?
Okay.
But, okay, yeah. Like, I'll believe it when I see it. And honestly, Kevin Durant is a generational all-timer. He's mega talented, but he'll be 32 when he's coming off this injury, and we'll see if he gets back to being Durant. And maybe he just becomes a different version of Durant with now, if they're going to bring like just 3-point shooting, you know, to Barclays as well. And maybe that just winds up being his thing. Who knows?
Maybe he's Ray Allen post, what was it? Knee in 2006 before he came over to the Celtics for whatever it is. He missed a chunk of time with Seattle. And then on the Celtics, he didn't need to be that same player who was going
to
lead your team in scoring. He just was a different version of his Hall of Fame self.
Yeah, maybe Durant, maybe it's a similar move. I don't have to be, I'm the best player in the world. I don't need to prove it. I'm going to be the best at this one thing now. Who knows? What do we know?
But guess what? That doesn't win you a championship because we have crunched the numbers and we know that Kevin Durant as a beta does not win you an NBA championship. Hoops detectives, get the boys on the case.
Get the boys on the case. That's actually a really good point, Sean. And I think one of the things I had marked down here that I wanted to get your thoughts on was just kind of like how we're looking at the value of NBA players. Of All-Star Weekend, that's one way to celebrate. The other way is at the end of the season with All-NBA, right? And I'm wondering what it is, like how you can gauge the value of a team based on kind of the national rankings of the players that you have making up your core. You know, is it better to have all-stars on your team or is it better to have all NBA talent? Do they have to coincide? Is the Venn diagram basically a giant circle or what? How does it measure up?
Well, I'll tell you what I like. And what I like is when you have a parade of all-stars. I've mentioned teams all year that I find really intriguing that I, you know, hoped would come out of their respective conferences and come up with collectively, from an advertising standpoint, from a league standpoint, the most boring NBA finals of all time, but one that I would really like, which would be the Pacers and the Jazz. But the problem with that is they've got star players on those teams. There is not a single elite player on either of those teams. And this is why the Jason Tatum thing is so scintillating to me. Because Jason Tatum is a first-time All-Star this year, but to me, he's also making the leap into All-NBA territory, and that is a place where Kemba Walker was last year. He was on the third team. He probably has a good chance to make the third team again this year. Jason Tatum right now, I think, can punch his ticket for the third team. But if he is playing like a guy who is one of the 10 best players in the NBA, then that automatically vaults the Celtics into championship consideration. And the narrative around the league is it's always about the rings. And again, I am just a guy who loves basketball. This podcast is our love letter to basketball on a weekly basis. We're just going to talk about the things that interest us. And to me, it is seeing good, deep teams with fun schemes, seeing how talent mixes, etc. But no, that doesn't win championships. We ran the numbers. And it's really about it just doesn't happen unless you have one or multiple elite guys. So for the Celtics to be on that podium or to at least be in the finals, they need Jason Tatum to be playing like one of the top 10 players in the league. For the Jazz to do it, they need Donovan Mitchell to be playing like that. And he's a nice piece, but we haven't seen him make the leap yet. So until really those guys do, they're just going to be in the crowd of also-rans. And it's a crowded race right now of teams and fan bases that think like, hey, we're in this thing, but I'm sorry. Unless you have elite guys, you're not going to be one of the final four or the final two standing.
There's a lot of teams in that boat too. I mean, how does a team like Philadelphia like rank up on that? Would you say that Embiid or Simmons, that they're in that elite level yet? Or are they going to be another team where it's like,
well, yeah,
you know, until like, so Toronto winning the title last year was a straight up anomaly. It just had never happened before. And until LeBron hangs it up, whatever team he's on is always going to be the favorite. You know, so I think you're getting some of that with, and granted this year with KD being out and Kyrie kind of like running the show solo in Brooklyn and like not really being on the team all that much, not playing very much. It's just kind of a season of rest, right? Curry and Klay are out. Kawhi and Paul George are testing this load management on-off switch. Harden is just doing Harden things, and that's it. And that has never worked before. Combining it with Russ Westbrook. So you have all of the superstars all kind of joined up, but nothing looking like it's totally coming together yet. But you have other guys, like you're talking about with Tatum and Donovan Mitchell and maybe the boys in Philly, like essentially getting themselves in position but not able to assume the mantle yet because it's crowded at the top with those elite guys. So what is it going to take to kind of like either to usher some new people into the elite status or to push the guys who are currently there out? What does that look like?
Well, let's kind of talk about, I guess, who we could see as our all-NBA team. I looked at the all-star rosters and I kind of plucked out the guys who I said, all right, these are the best of the best. And then and I also kind of thought, okay, who might have an outside chance if they close really well? And this is a guy who winds up becoming an all-star. Like, do we think Devin Booker could make the third team? Probably. You know, he might make the third team if he has a really good close to the season. And he winds up taking over Dame Lillard's all-star spot. But let me know if you agree on this. All right, your all-NBA first team is Giannis and LeBron is the forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Your center is Joker. And your guards are Luka and James Harden.
Yeah.
You fine with that?
Yeah.
All right, so then for a second team, a guy who's an MVP candidate, but he only makes the second team because Giannis and LeBron are the other forwards, I say you've got Anthony Davis. You've got Kawhi as your other forward.
Yep.
Embiid's your center because they still go forward, forward, center, guard, guard on these teams. And then Jimmy Butler and Dame Lillard are my guards.
Okay. Yeah.
So that to me is your top 10 players in the NBA, basically. You could make an argument that Embiid doesn't deserve to be in there, that he only gets there because he occupies the center position. Maybe you swap in, say, a Pascal Siakam for him, or, you know, a making the leap Jason Tatum for him, somebody like that. But those are your top 10 guys in the league, so it's just kind of like, all right, I'm sorry other fan bases who are having plucky, interesting, exciting to you seasons, but when it comes to the proof really being in the pudding, the teams who are going to be in the NBA finals, it's going to be teams who have one of those 10 players.
Yeah, there's really no other way around it, right? And like the best thing about those guys, they're propped up by great supporting casts, you know, and more so in others, but that's really like the supporting cast where it comes into who actually is going to win the title, you know, more so than elevating someone to all NBA
status.
That's
what it's all about.
Right. It's really interesting. Right. It's going to be, I think this season, more so than any other one in recent memory, the real story of the night of the 2019-2020 season is going to be told after the season is completely over. It's only in retrospect that any of this is going to make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just bark a bunch of numbers here to kind of put a bow on this comparison. In the last 20 years, only five NBA champions have failed to feature an all-NBA first-team player. So only five out of 20 teams have had a guy who's not top five. Every single NBA champion has had at least one player who's made the all-NBA second team. And there have only been two teams in the last 20 years out of 40 teams that have made the NBA finals who haven't placed anybody on either of the three all-NBA teams. Those would be the 2000 Indiana Pacers and the 2010 Boston Celtics, who you just mentioned. Now, they had all-NBA-level talent. Pierce, you know, routinely popped up on the third team. KG spent a good chunk of his career being a first-team, second-team, all-NBA-type player. Ray Allen as well. They just kind of collectively had a down year, and as we said, hit the gas, got the momentum at the right time, knocked Cleveland out of the playoffs when everybody thought this was the year to anoint LeBron, and wound up making the finals against the Lakers, but they ultimately lost. So it's you need elite guys. You need someone to at least be like to be the elite. And And then from there, it's on the supporting cast. I don't think anybody looks at the 2014 Spurs and says, okay, Tony Parker was all NBA second teamer, but because of that, you know, they are going to go over the Heat. No, it was the fact right. that he had all these pieces around him. So that, to me, like, fascinates me. It's kind of like, okay, we know there's a mold, so it's either A, are there candidates out there who are going to fit that mold, or are there teams out there who are going to completely break it?
Right.
So is there a team who can win the NBA title just by being a good team and not having an elite player, or is it going to just swing the way that it always swings, and is somebody making just a goddamn absolute leap that it's going to pop our eyes out of our sockets? And that's why, to me, like, Tatum is so intriguing. Siakam is so intriguing because there's a guy who, again, should be getting some postseason plaudits when they come up at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think you're right. Where it's like, it's got to be a mix of all the elements, where it has to be, you need elite level talent, or you need talent that's on the cusp of being elite, because again, it's all told in retrospect, right? So you need like momentum yeah. and chemistry to connect at the right time. So you need chemistry to basically build the type of environment you want to have on the team, the culture. But you need elite level guys who are buying in and pushing that culture up, and you need someone to catch fire at the right time. So with the Toronto Raptors last year, we just didn't see all yeah. of those pieces until the end of the Philly series. And then it was like, oh shit.
Oh yeah, like, you know, people would have said during the season, you know, that guy to be Kawhi's running mate is going to be OG Anunoby.
Right.
A fine player. But it wound up being Siakam and Lowry doing Lowry things and Fred Van Vliet being better than anybody expected to, and Mark goddamn Gasol coming over at the trading deadline and just playing like a professional veteran basketball player does, being the oil on the chain of that team and making everything flow freely. So I guess my question to you, Patrick, is based on this kind of elitist, you know, you only gain entry to the clubhouse if you got the password.
Right.
And right now it feels like that password belongs to a team like the Sixers, you know, just based on pure talent, right? A team like the Bucks, the Clippers, the Lakers. These are the most talented teams. These have the standout players. You know, these are the guys who are kind of guarding the gate. Can the Celtics crash that gate? And that, to me, again, this is a Boston-centric podcast, but I think this 12 to 15 game stretch of Jason Tatum that we've gotten recently, to me, is just, I think it's a major NBA story right now. And I love that it's happening to my team. It's
yeah.
like, all right, we get to be a part of this ride. This is really cool, particularly after last year.
Right. Well, I think for the Seas to crash the gate, a lot of other things need to break in their way. To break their way, rather. Like, so they're going to not only need to keep playing at a really elite high level and to stay healthy, but they also need like things to completely implode in Philadelphia. You know, yeah. I think that like if
more Furkan Korkmaz.
Yeah.
Please.
More Korkmaz, please. Less Horford, more Korkmaz. You're going to need probably like the Raptors to cool off or for a couple teams to kind of figure out the combination to the Raptors. You're going to need, and for no other team to get lucky at all. For all the things that are starting to click in Boston now, they're also starting to click in Miami. Miami, yeah. I would say, is a team that is poised to play spoiler to somebody, you know, or you're going to need Milwaukee. I think the team that's probably going to crash the gate is Milwaukee, honestly. They're in a better position to crash the gate and like make it to the finals than anybody else. But it's all predicated on Giannis being able to perform at this level and Middleton to have more frequent amazing games than he is, and for all those spare parts to stay healthy and not be and be actual contributors down the line once they're, you know, once every game is on national TV. Do they have the pieces? Yes. But all of the environmental stuff around them needs to be exactly lined up for them to crash this season. That said, crazier things have happened.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, a deer, a buck, is not exactly an apex predator
no.
of the forest. A lot of things need to work in a buck's way, and unfortunately for them, they really haven't since the early 70s when a certain Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was patrolling the paint.
Curious as to what's going to happen out west, too. It's been almost a foregone conclusion all season.
You are fascinated with the West.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it must be nice to watch basketball at 4 p.m.
Just coming home from work, yeah, on the train,
streaming the game. It's been a foregone conclusion almost all season that the Lakers are going to be there, right? I mean, that's what everyone's pick was. And then, or the Clips, right? I mean, are the Clippers going to be able to, they're never going to take the mantle of like basketball in LA, but they might be the team to beat this season.
They fit the mold the best to me. I mean, even more so than Lakers, because not only do you have elite all NBA level talents, I don't think Paul George makes one of the teams, but Kawhi is definitely there in the supporting cast and the environmental stuff that you spoke of, the fact that you've got a Doc Rivers, the fact that you did make a move at the trade deadline. Everything is pointing to the fact that LA is set up for this right now, whereas right now you got question marks around the Lakers. Okay, LeBron, first teamer, Anthony Davis, probably second teamer, both guys in the MVP consideration. But after that, it's just kind of like, well, what now? And that's going to be magnified in the playoffs. And I think they're also susceptible to bad matchups.
Yeah, for sure. Like, so if you pull it right now, if like the standings were going to lock in today, you'd have Lakers versus Memphis in round one. And I think, you know, I'm pretty sure that the Lakers are going to win that 1-4, potentially.
You think Memphis gets it done over Portland and the Pelicans and the Spurs for the 8th seed?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on Dame. If Dame is healthy, then I think Portland's got a pretty good chance of potentially bumping him out.
So Lakers-Portland, but they don't prove any sort of a threat to the Lakers, no. Certainly in the series.
I think if anything, a team like Memphis, if it was Memphis, they have a pretty good chance, I think, of wearing the Lakers down for their second-round matchup would be either Houston or Utah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because Houston, I don't think – Houston beat them with the small ball lineup, but I also don't think they stand a chance in a seven-game series playing like that. There's only so far that you can run the gimmick.
And LeBron hits threes too.
Jazz were the other one.
Yeah. 4-5. The 4-5 matchup is Utah and Houston right now.
So Utah again. It's on you, Donovan Mitchell. Because even if Mike Conley gets back to being Mike Conley, he's still just a nice supporting piece. It's on Donovan Mitchell and Rudy. You know, Rudy Gobert does Rudy Gobert things. He's not going to score 35 points for you in a game where you need it. It's on Donovan Mitchell with the Jazz. That's another team I think that could be really scary matchup-wise against the Lakers. I mean, you got Gobert in the paint. Not that he's going to stop Anthony Davis so much as Dikembe Mutombo stopped Shaq in the 2001 finals, but he's at least going to stymie some of that action in the paint. And then if the Jazz guards can come to play, like, that could be an awesome series.
Yeah.
That could be one of those series like in the, you know, in the 90s Western Conference Finals where you had, like, Olajuwon's Rockets, you had Sean Kemp and Gary Payton on the Sonics, you had Barkley with the Suns, you had the Mailman and Karl Malone in Utah. You had just intriguing tandems every year in the Western Conference Finals just kind of going at it, and this could be a second round series this year. These could be two teams that could be set up to see each other in the playoffs like the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. I think from looking at it right now, I would so much rather be the Clippers than the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers are having an unbelievable season. They've proved a lot of people wrong. They're sitting strong as of pod time, 41-12. And they've got, I mean, it's morbid, but they've got the momentum of like the passing of Kobe Bryant behind them. That's a unifying like event. Like, it's a compelling event. Like, other championship runs in history often coincide with these catalytic events to wind up pushing a team and fan base over the line. So,
yeah,
like the Super Bowl after 9/11, the Patriots won, right? It's very poetic that after one of the biggest tragedies in the nation's history, a team called the Patriots won the Super Bowl. That's big, right? And then also after the Boston Marathon bombing, the Red Sox won the World Series again that season too. Like, so with such a tragedy as losing Kobe Bryant, it's really brought the Lakers to another level. And like, that could really, like, you know, be like the catalyst that they need. That said, if everyone's locked in as of today, I would much rather be the Clippers than the Lakers, because every potential matchup for the Lakers from the 1-8-4-5 matchup is a ton of problems for that team. It's going to be a slog to get through. If you look at the Lakers,
that's why the seeding is so important.
Yeah. Like at the 2-7-3-6 right now would be Denver versus Oklahoma City in the 2-7, and the 3-6 as the Lakers and Dallas. I'm pretty sure the Clippers and Dallas. So if the Clippers can dispatch Dallas, which I'm pretty sure they can, to then go up against either Denver or Oklahoma City, that too, again, I think is probably in the Clippers' favor. So them to be waiting in the Western Conference Finals against a Lakers team that's had to really battle through two other rounds of really tough matchups for that team, that's a much easier path to the title. And then again, whoever they're going to face in the East, I'm sure it would be probably a similar situation in the East, although 1-8, they're a little more evenly matched, at least at the top. So it's going to be really interesting. And again, that would be another kind of, I mean, granted, you're going to have some all-NBA level talent and some all-star talent on that team. But again, this load management style, it just embodied by Kawhi Leonard, like being an easy path, like an easier path to the title, is really, really interesting. It's a subplot I'm definitely interested in.
Yeah, we should pop into that on a future pod. I mean, I've been saying all year the Celtics need to get the two. The Celtics need to get the two because they can't catch Milwaukee. But Toronto is still within shouting distance, and if they cool a little bit, that's for the taking for the Celtics. You want home court advantage. They're a decent road team. They're like four games over on the road. If you're the Celtics, you want to be at home and you want to be playing the Brooklyn Nets in the first round as opposed to a team that maybe you don't match up as well against, like Indiana, where they have big guys inside who are very effective. And Victor Oladipo has always terrorized this team. So if Victor Oladipo is healthy, I can only expect that to continue. So, you know, you just want to be the two in the East and let things fall from there. You avoid Milwaukee, maybe. You can even potentially avoid Philadelphia for a couple of rounds. You know, who knows how it's all going to shake out? There's going to be so much movement in both the East and the West in the time before we get to the starting line of the NBA playoffs in April. It's going to be fascinating. But like, you know, we have certain things that we're going to be looking at when we're watching League Pass or, you know, watching Celtics games on local broadcasts. And I think they're just going to keep popping up in our brains over the next couple of months here. As the really important factors in determining where we get, because again, with the NBA, it unfortunately on a national level, on the level that the conversation that everybody gets to participate in, it's all about the destination with those people. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to figure out what the journey is going to look like. And what are the things that we're going to enjoy and what are the things that we're going to hate about it?
One of my favorite things about watching basketball with you, Sean, especially live, is for anyone who has not had the pleasure, like when we watch the game and Silverwood just starts standing up and screaming, watch the roll, like on the game, because every single person in the arena is watching some point guard dazzle, like trying to out dribble or like going for a step back or whatever. And Silver is just like looking like under the basket for what the next move is going to be. So that's kind of like what this podcast is and the conversations that I like having in a nutshell, where it's like for anyone who's thinking about like, well, it's all about the rings or who's going to be there in the finals. That's fine. That's totally fine. But I would challenge you to say, do you actually like basketball if that's all you're concerned with? Or if the winning argument you have is how many rings do they have or whatever, that's such bullshit. It's just there's so much more to it than that. The 1-4 in both conferences is probably largely locked up. At least 1-3 is locked up almost in both conferences. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of movement at the top. But what makes basketball interesting is 5-8. And that's kind of where like all the movement happens, where you really got to pay attention. That's why the trade deadline day is so interesting to see kind of who does what to try to solidify that push. So that's what this is all about. And that's what the second half of the season is all about too, because you're going to have some teams completely take their foot off the gas and you're going to have other teams be like, no, we have a shot here. You know, like I got to think Detroit probably easing up. Memphis is ramping up.
Right, and you mentioned the trade deadline. It's not even, to me, the moves that the teams everybody is talking about make. It's about the teams that are going to give headaches to the teams that everybody is talking about. People ask me what I'm a fan of in sports. And yes, I'm a fan of my home teams, but never to the point where I'm going to cheer for Laundry over Havoc. I always like Havoc. I just like absolute mayhem in sports. So to me, the most entertaining spring that I can possibly have sure involves the Boston Celtics. But is a lot of shit going to go down in these playoff matchups? Or are we going to see 4-0 and 3-1 series all the way through? No, I want the former. I want shit going down. So that's the sort of stuff that we're trying to identify right now, what could potentially happen. It's going to become a whole lot clearer, certainly, as this podcast progresses. But I hope there's a few more subplots that we can uncover in future episodes that lead to some more interesting conversations about what is and what might be.
Amen. I mean, I can't wait. I think it's NBA, like All-Star Weekend is always a fun time to kind of like sit and reflect. They're going to do their community service day and kind of also do the same thing, right? I mean, and then this is essentially a glorified pickup game that gets really interesting in the last 5 minutes. And I love it, you know, but then we get back to business in the week ahead. But until then, this is just time to dream, man. This is, This is my favorite part of the season.
We'll be back in your rear buds next week with more knuckle push-ups. Great chopping it up with UP. I'll talk to you in a week.